Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Hello, halflings! Ooh. I always do it the opposite way that it's supposed to be. Hi.
No, that was it.
You sure?
That was the way it was supposed to be.
Hooray!
That was perfect.
Hi.
I just love how high you can go. It delights me every time.
I got a wild range. Hi, I'm Liv. Hello, halflings. Oh, God, it's terrible. I am joined today by...
Me, hey, it's Jeremy Cobb.
Never let me do this. Don't let me do the intro.
No, it's wonderful every time. It's me, Jeremy Cobb, but Benjamin Houlihan calls me Olivia William Cobbright.
Oh, that's all of us. Oh,
yeah.
Cute. Oh my God, I feel honored to be kind of included in a Jeremy nickname. I love that.
Yeah, I feel like that has to be. I feel like that's the Halfling Collective. Like if we merged, if we did somehow like a three-way fusion dance and became one being,
hello,
we'd be Olivia William Cobbright.
Cobbright, yeah. Yeah. But it's not just us, Jeremy. We are also joined today by whom?
Wait, there's someone else here?
I'm hiding. I'm out.
Oh, we've lost them. Oh,
next.
God. Oh, God.
No!
Why do we always do this, Jeremy? We always lose them.
I always scare everybody away, but only in interview context. We are joined today, everyone, by professional actor and vocalist, tabletop nerd, designer, host, moderator, jack of all trades, master of three, and my dad, Critical Bar!
Full Prince vibe? Woo!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and bitches.
Lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
We're about to get into something real big now.
Christ. I am happy to be your father. Anakin Skywalker style.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Thank you so much for being here, Dad. I
You're
appreciate
welcome.
It.
You deserve my presence. I hate everything about that. Nope.
You deserve
nah,
my
we're
presence.
We're going with it. We're entering 2024 with that kind of energy. Like, yes, my presence.
You're right. You're
is
right.
Amazing, and you deserve it. Yeah, I love that. I love it.
Yeah. I recently, this reminds me, I was talking to my mom and she was like, if your dad ever cheated on me, I wouldn't be mad. I'd just be like, well, that's your loss, dude.
That part.
Like, why would you do that? That's stupid.
So
that,
stupid. Yes.
Like, that is the mantra to go into. It's like, I'm not losing you. You're losing me.
Mm. Exactly. That's that sort of confidence. Like, yes, it is good for you to have me as your dad. Mm-hmm. And frankly, if you weren't in a relationship with me, that's your mistake.
Yeah.
Sorry to
you
say that part.
You fucked up big time.
Tried it and found out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We didn't say our pronouns. My pronouns are Jeremy.
Your pronouns are Jeremy.
Jeremy and Cobb. Jeremy / Cobb.
No.
We were saying beforehand. We were like, oh, let's do. We're gonna do this. We're gonna make it regular. It's 2024. Let's go. Hi, my pronouns are she, her.
My pronouns are he, they.
Yeah.
Oh,
gosh.
It's weird that I just used my nouns are he, him, and my pronouns are Jeremy Cobb. So if you're talking directly to me, you need to call me he or him. If you're talking about me, that's when you say Jeremy. That's like the idea that just occurred to me.
Yeah, sure. No, wait, the other way around?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
The other way around? No, wait, your nouns?
It's normally the other way around.
Okay, good. Okay, like, you were doing the thing. You were doing
nouns
the bit, I see.
Would be your actual name.
I see.
Yeah. Enough of this.
My mind
can't
handle.
Let's do a lore drop. So CB,
yes.
We start every one of our interviews, ever since, you can blame Erica Ishii for this, because they came up with this, and we start every one of our interviews with a lore drop.
Every time I'm like, it is, no.
essentially a small piece of lore about you that is bite-sized and has you don't give us any context, and we're not allowed to ask for any context for this piece of lore about you.
None.
Ideally, it's something that most people wouldn't know. But in and of itself is just like, what? And it makes us want to ask questions, but we can't.
Not allowed to. Not allowed to.
We all do one. And so at this point, the halflings are really scraping the bottom of the barrel.
No, I have to think about what do I not talk about out loud already?
I had one and it has since run away from my brain.
I am running
through my brain searching for it.
A celebrity thing? That was a thing?
Now I got it. It's back. Thank you, Liv.
Ooh, look at that.
Liv pointed it out to me. Mm-hmm. I'll give mine. So to my knowledge, I think it is the only celebrity autograph I have ever received was given to me on a Chipotle cup by the first man to beat Rafael Nadal at the French Open.
Oh, wow.
Huh.
I mean, go you, though.
Yeah.
You have a piece of history. Go ahead and put it on Etsy, eBay.
Yeah,
does eBay still exist? I don't even know.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I've looked at some Locana cards.
It's still
on
out
there.
Yeah.
It's going. That's my little nerd tidbit. But I've got another little nerdy tidbit, which is my lore drop. And I've got to remember her name, but this one is kind of cut and dry. It doesn't really leave you asking more questions. But like when I was a baby, during a ferry ride where my mum had me all curled up and whatever, not like a dog, you know what I mean, one of the actresses from Pulp Fiction came over to her and was like, oh hey, can I say hi to your baby? And that was me.
Now I want to know which actress it was.
I think she's called Siobhan. Pulp Fiction
Siobhan,
maybe. I might be making that up. CB, you feel free to drop some lore if you want.
Drop some lore
if you would like to.
I have something, but it's going to go to a place that I hope your community is okay with. I've coped with it. And I have to give the lead up because the lead up's important.
Okay,
all right.
Okay.
So, all right. When I was young, I want to say, and I unfortunately go by what year I was in school versus how old I was, but I know it was in first or second grade. I was living in a house that's actually second lore is literally around the corner from where I live now, which is wild.
Yeah. Nice.
But we were in a two-family flat, and our flat was right next to another building, like extremely close to another building. And our window faced that building, the window that me and my four brothers shared. I've six. There's six of us. Another lore drop. I'm just dropping all the lore today. But whenever it rained, specifically when it was like, you know, lightning out, you know, it's pitch black. There's no light coming in between the two buildings. But whenever it flashed, like lightning, it was bright white. And then suddenly again, back to like Fanta black.
Yeah.
Because of this, this is where I apologize in advance. Used to think that whenever it was that bright white for like 0.2 seconds, a member of the Ku Klux Klan could come snatch me. And no one would know I was gone.
Why would your brain jump to that? Why?
And that's why I have a phobia of storms.
What? How did... Why did it... Have there... Okay, so my question is... I can't ask questions. There's so many questions. Oh my goodness.
To be fair, I don't have that innate fear anymore, but it is the basis of my extreme anxiety that I get when like bad weather happens in the area.
That's such a horrific image, though. That they just have lightning powers, and all of a sudden they're just there.
Mine.
With the flash.
Jumps out of nowhere.
Terrifying.
That's an A24 movie if I've ever heard one.
That's so true.
That's a new Jordan Peele movie.
Yeah, isn't it?
I'm wondering. Well, not. I can't wonder. But there, yeah. I think I actually gave a lore drop. I think this is the second clan related lore drop.
What? What's happening? On three black halflings. What? How? Surely not.
I think so. I think one of my lore drops was about the time I accidentally walked into a clan march.
Oh.
Or was about to walk into a clan march.
I feel like ourselves. I would have remembered this, and but yeah, I don't. That's so
well.
Wild.
Then I'll just. This is for free. I'll give you this for free. My family and I were in Atlanta, and we went to. It wasn't just my family. We were actually there on a Bible quizzing trip. Mm. For a big tournament, and we went to go see the Coca-Cola factory while we were in town. And that's as good. We were leaving the Coca-Cola factory, we were like, oh, there's a parade. Oh, and as we were walking out, we were like, wait, why are they all dressed like,
oh no, run.
And we just like backed into the Coca-Cola factory. Oh. Like, we're just gonna hang out here for a little bit.
My God.
Wild. Well, I'm glad you're okay. I'm glad everything is fine. On a completely different note, Rona Gallagher is the woman from Pulp Fiction.
Oh, okay.
That's okay.
I was like Siobhan.
No,
Siobhan,
I knew it was like it, like how Siobhan is spelt. I was like, okay, it's one of the Irish names that is like difficult to spell. Like my middle name is Neve, so like I'm like, okay, it's one of those kind of names. I was like Siobhan.
Oh,
Rona.
Okay. Rona. Now I understand. Mm-hmm. Now I realize who that is. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she's the one who's like far out with the during the needle scene. During the I think so. I think that's her. Who's like amazed by the needle stabbing. Because she's
Trudy?
Just seen the ultimate piercing.
I have never actually seen
I haven't actually either. I haven't either. Yeah. So I should probably watch it. Probably.
I like it. It's a very good movie.
I mean, I've seen like clips of it, but I've never had the need or want to put it on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you like any other Tarantino movies? Like, have you seen any of them?
I mean, yes. Kill Bill, like, clearly.
I still haven't seen Kill Bill. I know.
I mean, you know, I mean, like, Inglourious Basterds. I mean, and I do love Django. Django is is fun. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fun is the wrong word, but I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. They're kind of fun.
It's an interesting.
There's a few parts that are fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
The but Django! Mostly not. Yeah.
Sorry. Wait.
Yeah. Pulp Fiction is more fun than Django Unchained.
I would. You know what? For various reasons. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. From Dusk Till Dawn. That's a Tarantino, isn't it? No, that's Robert Rodriguez. Wait, what?
He is in it.
But I think, is he in it? I think he helped. Make it. Yeah.
He helped. I think it was like a co-direction.
I think he wrote
thing,
it.
But it's not usually counted as like one of his movies.
He didn't direct it. He wrote it.
Screenplay.
Yeah. Co-wrote it. I think. Yeah. Like I think him and Robert Rodriguez did it together.
Okay.
That movie's nuts.
Yeah. It's right. Wild.
Yeah. From Dusk Till Dawn is.
Did you ever watch the TV show that they made?
No.
Because Robert Rodriguez had his own like station, right? His own TV station or something, or his own channel.
I have zero clue, but I know that. I think maybe so. But I remember watching it, and it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad at all. It wasn't the original. They definitely went there with the series because you know it is about vampire sneak thing people, all that. Yeah, so they went there, but it was cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I have a small Robert Rodriguez story, which is that it took me until I was about 19 or 20. I think I was 20 years old before I realized that Finnegas Floop is a silly name.
Finnegas Floop. Finnegas.
Yeah, the villain, the antagonist of the first Spy Kids movie.
Yeah.
Oh!
And then like the guy who joins with them in the subsequent movie.
The Thumb Man. Well, he's not a Thumb Man, but he has thumb men around.
Yeah.
Alan Cumming, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God.
I didn't realize that Finnegas Floop is a completely preposterous name until I was 20 years old.
You didn't realize that?
No. I just thought it was like a normal name. I was like, yeah, Finnegas Floop. And then it wasn't until I was 20 that I was sitting there and I was like, wait, Finnegas Floop?
My next TTRPG character is going to be Finnegas now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I feel like Finnegas isn't too bad. I feel like separately, Finnegas and Floop separately, but together, it's Finnegas Floop.
Well, because Finnegan is fine.
Yeah.
Finnegas is right?
Phineas.
Yeah,
Phineas.
Exactly.
Finnegas feels...
It's Phineas and Gus put together is what it is. It's too many names in it. Pick one, you know? Just pick one.
Jesus. CB, I have a question for you.
I have an answer, baby.
Ooh.
Excellent. What is your nerdy origin story.
Yes.
How were you birthed into this nerd life?
Mm-hmm. Well, so the birds and the bees are an interesting
Finally, people keep refusing to tell me this. I want to know about the birds and the bees. Please tell me.
Because I thought birds ate bees.
Oh, you, what?
You know, I don't know why it's called the birds and the bees. It doesn't really make that much sense to me. But you know, the whites can make up anything and make it make sense. So it's like, birds and bees. You know, not like two gorillas or something. I don't know. Anywho, I'm just thinking. Okay, we're done.
let's move off the subject.
Getting back,
I was hanging out. This is a side thing. I was hanging out with a friend of the show, James Mendez Hodes. Famed sensitivity consultant and just generally cool guy. Mm-hmm. And I happened to bring up the Hodozi thing, and he was like, you know what? I'm just going to tell people in future, don't do humanoid monkeys. Don't do it. Just don't do it.
You know,
it's not worth it.
It's really not. It's really not. It's like, and it's sad because like, I like the idea of playing something nimble like that with like using like a prehensile tail, but then do minstrel stuff. So, okay.
You'll be able to do the minstrel stuff. Okay.
Doing all the minstrel stuff. It's fine.
Doing it for everyone.
Happy joy. So my origin story in the world of the started, so my brothers, I'm adopted, and I remember my brothers talking about this weird thing called Dungeons and Dragons, but I didn't know what it was. I also was in foster care for about like 3/5 of my young life, so I didn't really get to experience a lot of the things that people, I mean, like, and I know the world, I know, you know, I have like a childhood, and there are games and media that I love, but I never really got into like, you know, anything Dungeons and Dragons tabletop wise, not really until I was an adult. But I was doing a 24-hour play festival, which are one stressful as hell. If you've never done one, don't do it because there's just no reason for it. But I was doing a 24-hour play festival, and the executive director of that show, Cal Cracky, I have to give him so much love. He wanted to start a D&D group, and I was like, you know what? This is my chance to actually, you know, do this thing that I have seen so much about. At that point as well, I was just like, I was a Tumblr nerd.
Oh, same.
I was a Tumblr role player.
My God, same. Wait, hang on.
Yes!
Oh, what? My God. I never meet anyone else who was
even before Tumblr, I was on like Pro Boards and Envision Free. I was a Glee RPer.
Okay, we have a lot to talk about here. Okay,
we'll come back.
Clearing the rest of the questions.
We'll come back.
This is the Glee podcast.
Oh, it is. I was a big Glee. Either way, that could have been another lore drop, but I'll go back to that in a second as well.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So, Tumblr. I had seen something called Widow Mock, and I was like, what is that? I have zero clue what that means. That was a ship for Caleb and Molly Mock. So that was like my first like really instance, like, oh, that's how I understood what Critical Role was. But I was learning about that. He had wanted to get a group together, and I was like, sure, let's do this. So again, big shout out to Kyle as my first ever GM.
Yes, Kyle.
25 plus people in this campaign. Not all at the same time. But we all were in the same consecutive story.
Oh, wow.
It was, and what we would do is, because he had all the time in the world, literally like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday were all D&D games for like five or six different people, you know, per group. And then we would do our big finales all together.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah, wild. So that's how I started. I played a high elf. Like, I don't know why I wanted to do a high elf at that point. I didn't really know like the differences between like the races and like their
I think I played a high elf the first time I played as well. It's just something is like, I'll be a tall elf, sure.
Yeah, it was there. And I played a character named Thotwar Galileo. Because I wanted a character named Thot. It's literally the only reason. And I was already like into storytelling at that point, again, being a Tumblr role player, being a performer. Mm-hmm. And I knew that when I was, you know, there was asking me, you know, what do you want to play? And I was looking at these things and I was like, I can cleric, but don't think I'm going to heal you because I think that's silly. Like cleric means faith. Cleric doesn't mean health. And so I played a Tempest Cleric of Talos, who would heal you if you pulled your weight. He would not do anything for you if you thought, come heal me. No, fifth level shatter.
Utilitarian cleric. <Yeah. laughs>
Like, literally tell somebody, you can wait one more round. And they were dying. They were in death saving throws.
But fine, don't worry about it.
Yeah, but that
is thought war.
Right?
Just like bleeding out.
They help me.
Like, you missed.
But
just
maybe
don't roll
not.
A one. Don't roll that's one. Okay?
One. That's literally what I said on the character. I'm like, just don't roll a one. You're fine. then from there, I mean, I was into D&D. I was totally into D&D now. I was on YouTube and Critical Role came back into my periphery because of Handbook or Helper, their helpful series to try to get into D&D. And me being a singer, me being someone who enjoys the musical side of things, that jingle stuck out to me immediately. And I was like, this is cute. Shout out to Sam. So I recorded it. And I did it myself and I do like this multi-track thing and I have like four of me, blah, blah, blah. And I posted it on Twitter and I walked away because I was babysitting my best friend's triplets. Looked back at my phone and the rest is history. Oh, wow. I was like, what is happening right now? and that's how I officially jumped into the space.
Amazing.
Okay.
The feeling of going viral is such like a fear-inducing thing. I posted a TikTok the other day, well, the other month, I think, and it was like, it just kept going up, and I was like, I'm being seen, and I don't know if I like it. Oh, God.
Stop perceiving me.
It's an interesting thing now, especially where I'm at now versus when I first got into the space, because back then, it was definitely like, oh, my God, this is kind of overwhelming, but also like, I guess a rush knowing that you're doing something that people enjoy. And you definitely get like, and I don't want to say a contact hike. I don't want to go into a space that feels like it's an addiction. But like, there's definitely a level of, oh, if I do X, I get Y, clearly. So let me do more of X now.
It's like a transaction almost.
A lot of people fall into that trap. They realize certain things that they do get them notoriety, whether good or bad, so they keep doing it. And that's definitely how it was at first about anything that I did that potentially like did numbers. But nowadays, it's like when I start to see an influx, it's like, what popped up that someone took out of context and now I have to go defend it? But
The other side of it,
exactly. But you know what? It's all part of the journey. It's the journey, for those who get their reference. I don't regret it. I don't regret anything. So
nice.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
Amazing. How did you get, because you said you got into D&D from being in a 24-hour play festival. Mm-hmm. How did you get into theater and such? Because I think we've had, the theater kid to TTRPG creator pipeline is very wide.
It can be.
I see a lot of people with those roots, but rarely do we have an actual working professional, I think. Somebody who's still working, and not just like, oh, I went to LA and I'm trying to be in movies and such, but like, no, I do this thing. I'm in shows. I do plays. Yeah. Like, I feel like the theater, when you get to theater and especially musicals, that's like the hardcore side of it, at least from where I'm sitting as somebody who also went to drama school. So I'm curious, how did you get into theater and all of that? That side of things.
So I come from a very musical family. Thankfully, my grandmother, rest in peace, and my aunt were like my inspirations for like performance. My aunt was doing theatrical works, doing tours. Like, she was like, I'll never forget. She's like, I'm going to Germany. And we're like, what? You're going to Germany? What do you mean? And she came back and like brought us back like some Swiss chocolate and stuff. Nice. Small memory from being a kid. But like, she was doing so much of that. So I was always inspired by like the idea of like not just singing. I sang a church. I was a legitimate soprano until the end of my freshman year of high school. And then puberty.
Big summer.
But I still retain my. I'm tenor. I retain my range that I have. I have a 4.5-octave range.
Nice.
But so yeah, I was singing since I was a kid, faithfully, whether in church or whatever, and then seeing her do like The Wiz and all that stuff, I've like fell in love with that, and I was like, I just love these things. And I'll never forget I was trying to remember where the love of it came from. And I recently remembered I was in like a summer school type of thing. And one of the days we just happened to be watching West Side Story. I fell in love with West Side Story. So then it's really funny how like the world makes things happen and you don't expect it to happen. Like how it is, like the trajectory, like you happen to be here during these X, Y, and Z moments. Foster care, all that stuff happens. I land in a space that has me in a school. I get to that school. The next show they are doing is West Side Story. And I was like, I had never done stage work at that point. I had only done like, you know, churchy things, or like I've done like performances, but I've never done like acting. And what was even wilder about that is that I was in choir with a good friend of mine at that moment. And our substitute teacher, our teacher was out, so we had a substitute teacher. And that day, for some reason, they had decided to play West Side Story. They announced they're doing West Side Story a week later in the theater. So it was like, it was very much like, all these things are lining up. Yep. And I remember me and my friend looked at each other. We're like, oh, we're Tony and Maria. You know that, right? That did not happen. she got Maria.
Oh. What did you get?
Arab.
Okay.
I was called back for Tony, though. And actually, fun fact, the person who got Tony is now engaged to my absolute best friend.
That's nice.
He took my part. And then I did West Side Story, and actually the only person who really tried to prevent me, because theater people are cutthroat. Like, you know, people, you see like the TikToks or whatever, and like you see like the asshole kids who like think they're like, oh my God, I'm like the theater kid who like knows everything and I'm the most popular, but in reality, you're like the least popular person in high school, because that's how theater
the Rachel
work.
Berries.
The Rachel
very
Berry
that,
type.
Very that. Yeah. That same aspect was happening back in 2008, 2007. And the only person who befriended me, because I came in very confident, because I came up into, you know, I was singing, I knew what I was doing. A lot of these kids, they love theater, but they didn't really have the skill behind it. Truthfully, and I did. So a lot of people immediately hated me. Immediately. I was just ostracized.
You were a threat.
One person, other than my best friend, came later. The one person who befriended me is now my adoptive brother. They adopted me.
Oh.
Oh, what? Yeah.
It's so sweet.
It's wild how that works. I started doing theater from there. High school, college, professionally. Here we are now.
That's so amazing. Okay. I'm still so thrown by like the fact that they were like, yes, come into our family. We love you. That's amazing.
Well, because they were driving me home to my foster family. And I was like, way out away from the school that I was going to at that point. Because I had moved. I was in a foster home. We had moved. And then I got taken away and moved somewhere else. And it was just, but I didn't want to leave the school. And I didn't want to leave the show. And they were like, yeah, we can take it home. And then eventually, like, why are we taking it home? Just take it back to our house. So it worked out.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So how then has your TTRPG career affected and interacted with your theater career? Like, do you even view them as separate careers at this point?
Yes. right? I'm trying to find a way to, not necessarily, I would never blend them, but find a way to be able to still do both as much as I can. Which is why I'm actually getting into the background side of things, starting to do more design work, doing things that I can just record versus actively having to be there for, et cetera, et cetera. So I still do a lot of work in the tabletop space. I will never give up theater unless my body tells me to give up theater. And it's hard. Luckily, right now, I tend to only do shows during the summer because I'm in St. Louis, the St. Louis Muni, which is the largest outdoor amphitheater for theater onto the world. That's huge. What is it? 30,000 seats, I think.
Wow.
Probably more than that.
Wow.
It's
huge.
Wild. But they have a very short summer season. Literally, y'all. I'm stressing out thinking about it. We rehearsed for 12 days?
Oh no.
For that size of a venue?
And then we do the show for a week.
Oh, that must be intensive.
It is intensive.
Yeah.
And this year they're doing Les Mis. So, they've done it before, but it's like, I'm hoping to be in it this time. So I'm just like stressing out about all right. That's a lot of music to come in with. But
which role would you want? Which role would you want?
Andras.
If you had to pick one,
I am gunning.
Yeah,
for Andras.
That is,
nice. I am like, I was gonna, I need it.
that was the one I was thinking of for you.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Hell yeah, yeah. That role has it has eluded me twice. So I'm like, I'm fingers crossing right now that like I get it. And I can't. I've done multiple shows with them now. They know my worth. They know what I can do. And I know the music director. So it's like, please. Anywho. But yeah, so like blending the two won't necessarily be a thing, but trying to do what I can on both sides is definitely the challenge. Because eventually, you know, I mean, I don't audition for Broadway. The reason I don't audition for Broadway is nothing's really caught my eye. There are a lot of people in this industry who like audition for everything. Even you're told that by your teachers, your professors, your fellow colleagues, audition for everything. In my personal opinion, no. Why would I? Why am I going to audition for Sound of Music? In what world am I doing anything with Sound of Music? Like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not auditioning for Million Dollar Quartet or Jersey Boy. Like, I'm just not. So I don't audition for that part. And it's like, I don't audition for anything that I don't see myself in, I don't see my people in, or I don't see myself enjoying at all. So if I can't answer at least two of those three, it doesn't happen. So a lot of the shows have been popping up recently. It's like, I would love to audition because I would love to be on Broadway. I would. But like, I just know that this isn't the show. That isn't the show.
Right.
So I'm waiting for that show for me that I know that can go in and be like, yep, booked. Again, I am very confident. It doesn't come out of like ego. Like I truly, like I know what I can do on stage. So I know what I can give and I know what I should be getting. So I know that if I gun for a show, I'm getting it. Because I believe in that. I know my worth. But I'm not going to start putting myself up for every single last thing because then you get so many no's back and it's like,
right.
I don't need that energy. So until that happens, I'm able to balance it very well. But that is something in the back of my mind. If I do Broadway or do a tour, you know, it's like, how do I keep up with the TTRPG space? I don't want to give that up either. It's become such an important aspect of who I am and what I'm doing. And it would suck to like suddenly just have to give it all up for X, Y, and Z. So I'm trying my best to balance. It ain't perfect yet, but, you know, we're having a good time.
I want to highlight one thing that you mentioned, which is how I think psychologically draining it can be on people to be auditioning for every single thing and keep getting no after no after no.
Yeah.
And how I think it's very important to keep in mind for a lot of people, and it can be extremely difficult to keep in mind, that like you're saying, as talented as you are, you would still end up with a bunch of no's. That's not because you're not talented. It's a lot of times it comes down to fitting.
Yeah.
Like, do you happen to fit with their specific vision of the show? Maybe they've already hired somebody or they already have somebody in mind for one role. Do you have match up with that particular person? Do you, there's so many factors that are completely outside of your control when you go into one of these rooms that it really does not come down to, it does at least does not just come down to how good you are at any given thing. Because oftentimes I would go so far as to say the most talented person who auditions may not necessarily get the role.
Nope.
Usually the person who gets the role is going to be at least somewhat talented. Like, they're usually going to be good, but like, they may not be the best.
They might have connections.
And it's not, you know? exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many different variables that come into play. And I've been on the other side of the audition table multiple times. I know what it's like. It is never about you're not good. It is literally about how do you fit in this vision that we have. Like, for instance, I was doing auditions. I was helping with the audition process for someone doing Assassins, which is a very particular show. But we knew who Booth was. We knew who Booth was. We had to start matching up to Booth. Not saying that they had priority, but it's like, we know this aspect and we know their voice. No matter how good you are, we want them, so we can't use you, right? That's just that's what it comes down to. It comes down to where do you fit? How does that all coincide? You know, and I've been on the other side where it's like, I know that I could do something well, but it wasn't for me. I had a call back for Rent last year at the Muni, and I was called back for Collins. Didn't get it. But then when I saw the cast, I went, oh, they were going for a very specific type for the show. And that's fine. I don't fit that. Don't fit that at all. Also, that dance call was a pickle. I'm dying inside. We're just thinking about all the fucking turns and leaps I had to do for Rent.
Yeah, exactly. Of all shows,
it was a very specific reason why they did it. I was just like, I'm dying inside. Still, yeah, it's like not everything is going to be for you, but what is. Mm-hmm. And I apply that, and I say for those watching, also apply that to like actual play work that you're applying for. Mm-hmm. A lot of people want to be in an actual play, or they want to do all these things, but you might not fit what is needed for that moment. Now, mm-hmm. there's a lot of nepotism in our community, and I will call it out. Yes. There's a lot of nepotism out there. And that's harder to deal with. That's harder to actually be able to like break through. Past that aspect, it's like sometimes what you want to do isn't what you need to be doing, and or isn't they? I don't want to say they don't need you, but you just aren't fitting what they need for that moment. So like, don't get discouraged if you apply for something you don't get it. It really has nothing to do with you. For the most part.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There has been, I know for our APs, mm-hmm. there is often a frustration. I experience frustration because I'll be like, oh, wow, I have all of these friends that I want to put in my stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I'll be like, oh, wait, all of these people are white. Like, I can't do a series with just all of these people. I truly can't.
Yeah.
Which means that it's not like I don't have a bunch of really talented POC that I also want to put into a series. Mm-hmm. It'll be just like, oh, these people I haven't worked with yet, and I'll look at the list and I'm like, oh yeah, they didn't
quickly say a thing.
Yeah,
it has nothing to do with what we were just talking about. Thank you for respecting the fact that POC is not an adjective. I try not to be a butthurt about it, because we use like ATM machine and stuff like that, so like I get it.
Yeah,
but also it's like, when I say POC people, what do you mean? People of color, people
say it
out loud, and then you realize how silly it sounds. Mm-hmm. So no, when you said that, I went, thank you, someone else gets it.
Yeah, I know exactly. There are so many conversational things. The big one for me is could care less. Somebody says that, I'm like,
yeah, it's good.
you could care less.
You too. Oh, well then.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. It's my drag. It's definitely hard out here when it comes to APs. And I just want people to understand that like the process of casting is harder than you think. Again, unless there's some backstage stuff that you can't do anything about, which is like nepotism or, you know, mm-hmm. a very much a specific idea for a show. But that doesn't mean stop trying. It just means think about what you really want go from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of people as well are like this nepotism, because people are, you know, they're used to what they know, and they're like, okay, I want to just work somebody who I know and I'm comfortable with. And it's like, but what if you branch out? You might find somebody amazing. You know,
that's not necessarily nepotism. I can understand work. Like, there are some people that like, yeah, I know that if I want X, Y, and Z, especially if I'm doing something quickly or whatever, these are my go-tos. I know for a fact I can work with them. I know for a fact we work well together. If schedules align, let's do this. Safety is not nepotism. Being comfortable with a space is not necessarily nepotism. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, saying that you had it right, you're wrong, but I'm just saying like, I see some things that it's like, did this person truly need to be the person you asked, or did you ask them because now I'm not saying you're doing them a favor or X, Y, and Z, but it's like I've seen some things and I'm just like, I expected that at this point because that's all you do, you know. And it's like, I'm not hating on you, but it's like I see that, we see that, right?
Yeah, so I do have some scenarios in mind that match up with what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say them out loud.
Oh, no, we don't need to. This isn't like airing teas. But like, all know, right? I say that to say there are just some scenarios that no matter how much it angers you or whatever, you can't do anything about. So work on what you can work on. Get your setup right? Make you have a good headset and microphone. Or have, I don't want to say good, a Yeti. I started out on a freaking snowball. It works.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It so works. Did I. That was the first episodes of this show I was recording on a snowball.
Yeah. It's funny. I have a Shure mic in my closet. I got to get through equipment for it so I can actually use it. So I've still got my Elgato. And I'm using the Logitech C922X. Shout out. I'm a Logitech partner. Use code acquired to get things. Casual self promotion. I'm using the exact webcam that I started streaming.
That's really cool.
Yeah. That's very cool.
It's just with other things that I have, it just looks more crisp, but it is the exact headset. I mean, it's like the webcam.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, put yourself out there. Like, that sounds like when I was trying to like get my streaming setup together, like I was just constantly like, oh, okay, I've got to get this piece of equipment and you know, then it's going to look better and I'm going to feel better about it and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, yeah, as long as you're just putting yourself out there, like, just don't stress about that. You know, it'll come.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned several shows. Like, you were talking about when you were talking about in the theatrical world being like, oh, I don't want to do certain shows. Like, for example, Sound of Music. Mm-hmm. I feel like being a Black person in musical theater is often very limiting compared to, at least depending on what shows, like, for example, you mentioned West Side Story and you were cast as one of the Jets. Now, I would have expected, like, I'm just following the logic of that. And I'm like, I feel like if I was going to make West Side and I had Black people that I wanted to put in West Side Story, I probably wouldn't put them on the Jets. And that's obviously industry wise, that can be like a big factor. Like, for example, when I was auditioning for musicals, there were certain ones that I was getting called in for and other ones that I wasn't. So I would get called in for Hamilton. I would get called in for Lion King. I would get called in for the Book of Mormon. But I would not get called in for one of the Mormons.
Why, if I can ask a counterpoint question, would you cast me as a shark?
Because I think the main theme of that show has tied in with racism. And I would, unless I was going to have one side, unless I was going to have the Jets be a mixed, like, it does, unless I was going to have the Jets be all Black, then I probably would not have a mixed race group of Jets. Because a lot of it comes, it's not just about immigration. It also is tied in heavily with racism. And so I feel like I would feel more comfortable casting a Black person as one of the Sharks rather than one of the Jets.
So I'm going to challenge you. The reason I ask that, because you're correct. I'm not saying it's not about racism. Clearly, the Puerto Ricans deal with racism. But that's also the stressor. It is Puerto Ricans, not Black people. And specifically, something we discuss, and yes, it's about immigration, but like, it's also, there's a moment in Act One when the Jets and Sharks meet up at Doc's, before Doc gets there. And before, sorry, before the officers get there, ACAB. And the Sharks start throwing out slurs, but they're all slurs from different nationalities. So so when you think about it, it is about immigrants, but it's really the immigrants who have settled versus the immigrants who are now here. So when we did the show, it was like, you have, you know, Black folk who might be Irish. You have Black folk who might be X, Y, and Z. Because, like, Arab is Irish. You know, Tony's a Polak. This is what they say. You know, he's Polish. And, like, there's all these different, there's a melting pot. And it's the idea of, you know, they weren't deemed white until they were. Until they had to separate themselves from something else. So it's like, there's a mixed bag of different immigrants, Haitian, all that's, and I'm not Haitian, but you know, like, we can argue that there's a mixed bag of immigrants who are here together who are all angry at the Sharks who are all Puerto Rican. So when I ever do the show, unless that Black person is an Afro-Latino, I don't want them in the Puerto Ricans because they're not, I'm not Puerto Rican. Same thing, I wouldn't want a Puerto Rican who's not Black to be cast in like The Wiz. Playing a Black person, you know? So I was just like, I hear a lot of people say that, you know, all the people of color should be Sharks. That actually defeats the purpose of the story. That does also have intentional casting. Sometimes you don't see any, you either see white people and Latina people, you don't see anybody else. And sometimes if that's what you have to do for that show, that's what you have to do. Because again, the visual difference is also apparent, but you could argue that because it's mixed immigration, that more people can be mixed on the Jet side than the Shark side to be. It's my same issue with like Aida is my issue with Once on This Island. Those shows are about colorism. They're not. It's like whenever I see whites playing Egyptians, I'm like,
Yeah, Miss
Ma'am.
That's not correct.
It is Egypt versus Nubia. And so it's high society versus what they dub to be lower. So colorism is so baked into that. Same thing with Once on This Island. It is literally the Bozoms versus, you know, Timoon and her folk, and I'm forgetting what we call them. And it's like the Bozoms literally have a line where they say they are coffee mixed with cream. They are light skinned as hell versus the darker, native folk who are already here. It's like, I wish more people realized those things versus looking at, oh, you're a dark person, then go over there. It's like, no. Mm-hmm. Think about the why. Mm-hmm. Sorry, that's a tangent.
I think that's a really interesting way to look at that. I think it's a really interesting way to look, like, especially in the case of West Side Story, to look at it as primarily along immigration lines and saying that, well, these people happen to be more settled.
It's xenophobia.
And also, I guess it adds like a level of like it's hypocritical, just like in a way, isn't it? Just kind of like, why are you against this one group of people when like you've got a melting pot of people like in your gang? Like, where do you draw the line?
And you all were just the problem a bit ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now that you've claimed that, oh, we're actually fine. It's you. It's that's history. That's history, you know, writing itself in front of us with, you know, kickball changes.
No, I love that.
Triple jazz squares.
Yeah. I think if somebody approaches it from that perspective, I think then the casting makes sense. For me, the race aspect still would take precedence over, over the immigration aspect, because I think even beyond the immigration lines, I think if we look at the immigration aspect of it, at least for me, it's not just about settled versus unsettled. There's an additional color thing that gets 100% inserted into it.
And I absolutely agree with that. And I would cast with that intentionality as well. I just wouldn't personally put an African-American as a Puerto Rican. Because it is about their culture. Like, America is about coming from, you know, even though I'm not going to say America is Puerto Rican, you already know that's the whole thing with that. Colonizing. also, like, I would want to respect the fact that I am not of that culture. So people who are of that culture should be the sharks. And it's easy for people to say, all the black people, all the people of color, just go over there. And it's like, that's not me, though. So I don't even put myself, like, whenever I ever, if I am not a dancer, I can dance. I'm not a dancer. But if I ever audition for that show, you're like, you don't see me, I'm not putting my name for sure. I'll be glad hand at that point. But
yeah, no, it's definitely valid. No, I thank you for bringing that perspective to us, because like I hadn't thought about it that way. I think I always imagine it in terms of like when I was in like high school, and like it would have just been like, oh, we don't have enough people of color, so go over there, you know, like. Well, you know, I always think of it.
And educational theater is an important part of theater. Mm-hmm. It is not the most, it's not the most accurately represented type of space, because it's a space where you can learn and you can grow. You can literally educate yourself on the X's and Y's of things, knowing things. Like, for instance, when I was in high school, my teacher went to Japan through the summer I can't tell you exactly what the trip was for, but it was definitely something for their teaching. And they came back, and there was like a part of that agreement is that we do Pacific Overtures, which for those who don't know, is one of Sondheim's hidden faves that I love. And it's literally about, I want to say it's not about colonization, but it's about Japan, and like there's a character who's like super traditional to the T, and there's a character who's like willing to embrace like the modern times, contemporary things, and then as the show goes on, they literally switch places. But you see the growth of Japan in that time, Commodore Perry coming out and all stuff, but it's Japan. I don't think we had any Japanese people in our cast at all. Yeah. But it's educational theater. That's the time to like learn and experience. Now, getting out of that, and I think nowadays in 2024, it's definitely a little different. Like, they kind of approach it with a little more intentionality, I think. But also, I think that is the only time where I forgive seeing moments where it's like, all right, that's not necessarily what it should be, but this is a time to learn. This is a time to learn your craft, learn the history of what's happening in our space, and learn what not to do as you leave the space. I think all that, that is the time to learn it. College, I still, I don't really think college. High school, yes. College, y'all adults at the point. It's fine. It's fine. Fine with the caveat that you're learning.
For sure.
That's fair to me.
I completely agree. I do definitely agree that there is a problem with trying to lump all POC into one group. I've never liked really the phrase, the acronym POC.
I don't either.
Like, why? There are more of us worldwide. Why do we get the acronym?
I hate that.
Like, why did we all get lumped into
together? Yeah.
Because it's also, I also hate it because I feel like we're going on a tangent and it's totally fine. I also hate it because people forget the color part of people of color. And it's like colorism is so, like, such an important conversation to have when it comes to race. So when, and it's like, and again, I love, I'm not gonna say I love everybody, but like, I appreciate the existence of everyone. And I'm never going to, you know, downplay their plights and the things they go through, especially for our different cultures. But when I see somebody extremely white passing, it's like, yeah, I'm a person of color. It's like, but you go through the world like you're not. And it goes back to the lumping thing. I hate that we're all just like lumped together in this little space where you have the privilege of the people getting on the boat in the Titanic and I'm stuck in the boiler room.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like,
and there's, and even within that, different minority groups, like you've heard, obviously in the United States.
Yeah.
I don't know if they, I think they kind of have it in the UK as well. The idea of the model minority. Mm-hmm. So if you are Asian, specifically East Asian, you are going to be treated differently than someone who is, for example, from the Middle East, part of Asia. Like, if you're from there, the expectation is going to be different. Also, from South Asia, you're going to be treated differently than you are, say, if you're an African immigrant, or if, in fact, you're just a black person who was in America recently, or who's been in America for hundreds of years. Like, there's a lot of... It doesn't make sense to try and lump in... There are definitely parallels and shared things between those experiences, but... I don't think it is always useful to just consider them all as a category.
Agreed.
Yeah,
and just be like, yeah, they're all just, I think, but what I wanted to ask was, obviously, in the performing arts industry, colorblind casting has become more popular and more prominent, which is, I mean, how you're about to be potential. I'm manifesting how you're about to be Enjolras in Les Miserables later this year. But the... My question is, have you found that being a black person in TTRPGs has had any sort of effect on your career in that space? Beyond simply the idea, because I want to acknowledge pretty much any POC who's going to be in a public sphere, like especially a public online sphere, is going to receive levels of vitriol that greatly outstrip if you are a white masculine presenting person, the amount of vitriol you are going to receive is probably going to be significantly less than a black masculine presenting person at the same level of popularity as you. So acknowledging that, has there been any other areas, would you say, like career-wise, that it has impacted you in TTRPGs as a black creator?
I mean, the base answer is yes. We talk about it a lot. I mean, one of the first things I did in the space was, I still stick by it, and I want to do I want to return to it this summer, the Black as Fuck Roundtable, which is literally a conversation about the trials and tribulations that we face as Black people in the TTRPG space. And so many people did not realize how, complacent is the wrong word, but like how they were adding to the things that we dealt with without even realizing they were. It was very eye-opening. I've been offered things, and I found out that the rate I've been offered is the much less than the white counterpart, even though I have thousands more followers. I have much more recognition and traction. I'm not saying that all that's important, but it kind of is.
If you're going to be paying one person more, you'd think it would be based on how much attention they're about to bring to your project.
You would think so. I've definitely been underpaid. I've been, you know, almost like, I don't want to say blacklisted. That's definitely the wrong word. But like, there's definitely been spaces where it's like, we had a couple, like, I mean, I'll use this example. I had a conversation with someone, and I'm not going to say their name, and I was going to be a part of something they were doing on a live show. at a convention, a very popular convention. I got ghosted. Wow. Even though they approached me, I got ghosted.
Really?
After I'm asking questions, I'm not asking like invasive questions. It's like, hey, I just need to know what's happening here. You know, what's like the hotel and flight plan, all that stuff. If anything, and if you're not offering that, totally fine. I guess no details, blah, blah, blah. But I would like to go to this convention. I had never been. Mm. All of a sudden, I saw a cast. I saw a promo. Mm. And I was like,
oh,
interesting. Like, you know, I guess compartmentalize, throw away that key for a bit, but like have it in harm's way, so I need to go grab it and re-unlock it. But it's like, no, as black people in this space, it is easy and hard. It is easy because people are scared of black people in this space. And what I mean by that is, if you wrong a black person in 2024, especially in the TTRPG space, in the social media atmosphere that we have now, run. And I don't say that as a threat, but it's like a lot of people know that you can't get away with doing something like that. So they are hesitant. And because they are hesitant, they are scared to cast you. They are scared to work with you to begin with. Because they don't want to be the one to F up. They don't want to be the one to now be the next, you know, twit longer that don't exist anymore. But, you know, be the next twit longer about how they did X, Y, Z against a person of color, specifically a black person, because now their career is ruined.
Yeah,
I've been told by multiple people, I want to work with you, but I'm scared to. I'm scared to because I'm very opinionated. I'm blunt. Again, I'm an open book. And I'm not disrespectful, but respect is earned and not just granted. And especially in the space where, you know, Anglo-Saxons think they just get it because they exist. And it's like, no. I don't applaud mediocrity, ever. And I'm not saying that you are a mediocre person or you are doing mediocre content, but if you're doing the bare minimum and you're getting all what you're getting, I don't applaud that. Because I see people working 10 times as hard as you and are getting, you know, scraps. But I've had people flat out be like, I would love to do something with you, but I'm scared that if something goes wrong, that I'm screwed. And I have to go, why do you think that? Like, I'm professional. When I'm at work, I'm at work. And TTRPGs are work at this point. Doing action play is work at this point. You know, doing design work is work. And it's like, I come in, I show up, I do my job. I don't cause problems. I'm not saying you're saying I'm causing problems, but you're saying that you have a fear that if something goes sideways, then you're going to, that has to go, but what makes you think something's going to go sideways?
That's on you. Like, I feel like if somebody's afraid of that, then they have something to hide. That's automatically what I, what I mean. Like, if you, if something goes wrong, it's because of your actions. There's no in between, you know.
And the people, the people I want to work with are people who are willing to be called in and are willing to call me in because I am not infallible. I mess up. We all do.
Oh yeah, we all do. Yeah.
And anyone who says that they are, you know, aren't wrong, is somebody I don't want to work with. Ever, unless they really aren't working, and they just, you know, backing up their words. But it's like, I am willing to accept that I have done something in a way that maybe appears a certain way, maybe doesn't, it's taken wrong, or maybe I just truly messed up. And I expect you to call me in, but in the same breath, you need to be willing to also be called in when you mess up. And I am one of the few people in this industry, I firmly believe, and I say that with all my heart, I'm one of the few people who just doesn't hesitate. A lot of people do. A lot of people want, you know, they have a way of being perceived. They don't want to be perceived as someone who's confrontational. They don't want to be perceived as someone who's is hard to work with. And I don't care if you think I'm hard to work with. I know I'm not. But if you think that because of the way that I am now contacting you because you messed up, I mean, that's all on you, fam, you know? So it's like, I am never going to change the way I approach things, but understand that I don't approach things out of line. I'm always going to be as professional as I can. And a lot of people, again, it's a lot of people are just like, they're scared of that. So it's like, all right, cool. But yeah, with all that being said, yes, there's a lot of hardships being a black person in this space. You're going to be misunderstood. You're going to be passed over. You're going to be underpaid. Sometimes to get what you want, you have to make it, which I absolutely hate. I hate the idea of, you know, If you want something done, just do it yourself. It's like, well, that can be true. I understand the gung ho aspect of that, you know, getting it until you get it. But also, like, why does it always have to fall on me? Why do I again put in triple amount of work to do the thing that you just get to do? It's irking.
I want to throw out, I think it also, there's a tendency for the industry to become overly centralized around a couple of people of color. Like, I feel like let's put it this way. There's a bunch of really well-known white male DMs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
There are not a lot of well-known black women DMs.
No.
There are a lot of good black women DMs.
Yep.
But most people can probably only name one. Yep. And I don't think that's her fault. I don't criticize her in any way for that. I think that is a sign of the industry.
Yes.
Oh yeah. I was just going to say, to be clear, Abria, right? We're talking about Abria.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's my sister. I love her. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly.
There's nothing but love on this show for Abria. But yeah. I think that the way that the industry has treated her reflects the biases of the industry itself.
Oh, no, exactly. Like, it's no fault of Abria's that people are thinking, okay, we've got Abria, we're good.
We're good
like,
now.
Like, we don't have to do anything
else. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly the thought process I was trying to get to.
Abria right now is where, I don't want to say it like this because it almost makes it feel like, you know, we're putting people on pedestals and we're like comparing and stuff like that. And that's not what I mean. But back in 2020, when I had the conversation about the Breakfast Roundtable, Abria now is what B. Dave Walters was. Everyone wanted to work with B. Dave. Everyone, whenever they say they know somebody in the industry and they know somebody black, they immediately said B. Dave. And it's like, that's not the only person you know? Because there's a problem.
Yeah.
It's like, and it has nothing to do with him. Get your money, get your bag. I'm happy that people know you.
Absolutely.
But like, it was clearly that people were tokenizing this one person or putting preference on this one person and not doing the work to do anything past it. So now, 4 years later, Abria's in that spot where it's like, all right, we got Abria. And it's like, but I'm looking at three people on this channel right now. There is a list. There are so many people out there who put in the work and do good work, but you don't care to look because you found your one. I'm gonna make sure she gets her bag no matter what.
She
can stay where she's
at. She can stay where she's
at. I just want more
people
to have the opportunity.
She's phenomenal
to
and
deserves
everything she has.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it's not her, it's everyone else. It's such a shame to see.
Yeah.
I mean, we strive, you know, for example, when we did Curse of the Spider Queen, we put out a casting call to, you know, just try and get more people of color to join us and play a game.
Mm, especially women of color for that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like, it's hard. It's such a shame that you know, there aren't more people that we can just point out in the industry and go, okay, yeah, we'll bring you in. You can come and it's I want more people of color in the industry, so desperately.
100%.
The idea of it, for example, if Three Black Halflings was in the stratosphere, all of a sudden, tomorrow, I would be like, okay, now it's time to bring other people in who also deserve this, you know, not just us, you know?
Yeah. 110%. CB, it has been incredible having you here. I actually wish we could keep going. I'm having a blast. But I want to ask you this. We ask every single guest. We wrap up our interviews with a tale from the table, which is a story from a tabletop role-playing game experience that you have had. It can be funny. It can be exciting. It can be tragic. It can be triumphant. It can be scary. There's any number of any emotion, something that stood out to you, made an impact on you emotionally from one of your games. Can you think of one?
You just called me out. I know I can.
It can be sad, funny.
I think so.
You're thinking.
I'm like, Blake, I'm like, wait, I'm there. I'm there, but I'm not. Yeah, talk. Just say something.
Yeah, while you're thinking, I actually haven't played TTRPGs in a while, but I think, what is one that I've said before? Oh, Oh, so I'm going to throw back to last year. I think I've talked about this before, but at the Convergence, put on by a friend of the show, Quincy. I don't think Quincy's actually been on here yet. We got to get Quincy on here. But Quincy's a cool dude. He had Jasper and I come out to his Convergence last year at Evermore Park. It was a lot of fun. And the very first game I did was one of my favorite, one-shots slash paid games that I've ever run. With the cast all brought it. Like, there was such by the end of it, even though I'd never met any of these people really before, but we all felt like, at least I felt like, wow, I know all these people. We're friends now. Mm-hmm. We captured that feeling that can sometimes be elusive, I think, in TTRPGs, which is that feeling of like magic that we just made something together and it meant something in that moment. Mm-hmm. We all felt it and we shared it and we were all like sitting in this soup, and every time we pushed the soup, like we'd add a little bit of ingredients, everybody'd be like, oh,
here we go. Mm-hmm.
That was that whole, we did like a Redwall sort of themed game where everybody was playing animals. And it was like in a world that was influenced. It was sort of based on I think maybe pre-medieval Norway. I think it was pre-medieval Norway was the setting that I had made. And it was just so cool. It was a really, really fun adventure. There was like time travel and people losing their memories and people like having out of body, like supernatural experiences. Mm-hmm. And then a mole with big metal claws over his claws. It was a lot of fun. It was really cool.
That sounds cool. I love that. I did think of something, and I actually want to give a shout out to Katie Asores because she had made me think of this recently, and I was like, you know what, that was one of my very, you know, sometimes you doubt yourself. I mean, doubt is normal in anything that we do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're like, you know, it's not am I good enough, but it's more so like, am I doing something impactful? I think that's mm-hmm. a better way of putting it. And I think about that DM battle royale on the ship. That we all did.
That was a lot of fun.
And it was one, it was fun to see all the DMs. So at D3HC, one of the things I put forward, because the DMs are doing so much work on this cruise. So much, y'all. And I was like, you know what? Let's have a time where they can have some fun. And since I was one of the veterans of the cruise, I was like, I'll run it. I'll have fun. We're gonna do a battle royale. You all bring your best a game and nice. Have a good, and this is for fun, you know. And I had a ways for people to like monetarily support the GMs, mm-hmm. like they can like pay them to like give them advantage or things of that nature, stuff like that. So I was glad that the GMs all walked away with a good chunk of change after that.
I played Boxy Cleopatra.
Yes,
that was the name of my
character.
And
a whole Boxy lot of women. Cleopatra. Hell
and,
yeah!
And you and Jesse was underground for most of the dang fight. but the whole premise was. This extraplanar ethereal, not ethereal, I should say, eldritch entity called the Maestro, who brought all these champions from various spaces and time and planes and whatever, and was like, this is not a fight to the death. This is, you all have done great things, and you're all going to walk away with something. But one of you is going to walk away with a boon that's going to be able to help the space that you are in and whatever you need that to be, because that's the Maestro. That's what they can do. They inspire, right? But you know, when the Maestros are throwing terrasse and things at people, it gets a little stressful. And you know, they're all fighting and people are getting knocked out and blah 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 and having a good time pulling from the deck of many things. And at one point, I don't know if it was Kate's deck pull or not, but she was like, we're not doing this. Yes, I know you're saying that we're going to get glory out of it, but clearly you're just like making our lives hell for a little piece of change. And she rallied all the GM characters against me. And I was like, you know what? This is right. This feels right. Because it's about them coming together and showing who they are and why they're here. And it was just like a really cool moment of me like letting loose, allowing change in that way to happen, because that was not a part of the mechanics. I'd had nothing prepared for the Maestro. But I say, F it, let's do it. But overall, that was such like a good, like a really good feel-good moment in my TTRPG. It's worked such far. Just having a good time and letting people work and letting people vibe. And at the end of the day, making sure people are still having fun. And that was the way they were going to have fun, was destroying me. So I said, fine.
I love that.
I want to add, I want to add, as somebody who was there, another aspect of it that I think was that made it unusual for at least for me is the fact that it was live. Mm-hmm. Because I think as a theater performer, look, we've all watched recordings of plays. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different ballgame when you're in the room.
Yeah.
It's just, mm-hmm. it's utterly transformative. Yeah. And that was actually a question that I had, was talking about, we won't get into it necessarily, but the idea that tabletop role-playing games as an industry is primarily broadcast.
Yes.
It is very rarely live. Now, the few TTRPG show live shows that I've either been in or been to have been completely different than they would have been had they just been recorded. Mm-hmm. And it was really cool to get to do that as a live show because it changed the whole tone and tenor of the game.
Yep.
And I thought that was really fun that we got to share that with the audience.
And I try to stress that a lot. It's like, we're starting to get into a space where we're starting to pre-record actual plays, which is totally fine. But it's like mm-hmm. a lot of actual plays were like live in the moment. And it's like, y'all are doing this for an audience. You are performing. Mm-hmm. This is an extra skill set. This is not just you knowing your character. This is you now being able to convey your character for an audience. Mm-hmm. And that takes more skill than just being able to say, I roll X, Y, and Z. And so, yeah, that's another conversation for another time. But yeah, it was very fun. And the audience aspect and that live aspect really fueled that game. I mean, literally with, you know, the coins and buckaroos that I got, but also just like the energy of what was going on. Like everything was fueling. It was like two circles that are like combining with each other over and over. Mm-hmm. That energy just never ending. It was so... so good, and I will gladly do it again.
That's great.
Wink, nudge, Gen Con.
Hey, I'd like to throw my name into the hat as a veteran of the original game. But thank you so much for being here, CB. Where can the folks find you? Please, we're going to give you this plug. Please plug yourself.
Plug away.
However you wish.
You can find me everywhere at Critical Bard other than Tumblr, because I'm not going back there ever. We didn't talk about Glee! No!
We didn't talk about it, no.
We didn't talk about Glee!
You'll have to come back and we'll have to have just a Glee episode.
Yeah, we gotta do like a side down. Glee episode.
I'm always down. You can find me everywhere because Tumblr. I do a bunch of stuff in this space. I'm a Twitch partner, so you can always catch me streaming at twitch.tv/CriticalBard. I mean, I'm on TikTok, all that jazz. I'm going to announce it here because I don't know when is this going up?
This will be out in a few weeks. It won't be out next week. It'll be out in a few weeks, like 2 to 3 weeks,
okay.
I think.
Okay. I'm going to announce it. It's fine. Yeah. It's not going to be up by then. We're aiming for a February 1st launch, but I think this is totally fine to announce it. Myself and Gabe James Games, Gabe Hicks, we are starting a podcast. We are starting, it is called the Tabletop Barbershop, where it is a TTRPG podcast, not for the tenderheaded, where we're just going to wax on and have a good old time. You can totally catch his fate if you come in correctly with us. It's going to be a good time, and we're very excited about it. We're launching something on February 1st, so watch out for that. Tabletop Barbershop is where you can find all that information. And we can't wait.
That's exciting.
Can't wait for it.
I can't wait to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
And then past that, I'm on Harold's Feast and Fast to Perform Go Kill on Amazon Freevee and Plex. You heard my voice on Critter Hug on which was Critical Role's Pandemic Signal Boosting Show. That should totally come back because we need more of it. And again, just everywhere at Critical Bard. I do way too much at this point. Like I said, truly, Jack of all trades, massive, like maybe three of them. So thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Here.
Liv, where can the folks find you?
You can find me on various social platforms, mostly as @DoesDarkMagic. I'm on Twitter and TikTok. I'm doing a bunch of now. I like TikTok quite a lot. Also, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And also, we've got a website now, www.3blackhalflings.com. Go check it out for more information on us. Also, check out Dicebreaker. I also make a bunch of stuff on there if you feel like it. Thanks.
Yeah. You can find me at Jeremy Cobb 1. That's Cobb with two B's and the number one on Twitch. Not Twitch, excuse me. I have a different thing on Twitch. On Twitter and Blue Sky. You can find me on Instagram at the Cobbmeister. You can go check me out on Roll For It's series Project Mirana, which is, I believe, almost ending, but most of it has now been posted to YouTube. It is a horror series, a Call of Cthulhu series, where I play a sad 49-year-old gay man, and then his 19-year-old, much less sad, still gay self. It's a fun time. We jump back and forth between the 90s and the 2020s. It's a good time. The things get truly insane in the back half of that show. Like, genuinely insane. The GM walked away from the camera multiple times with some of these roles by the end of it. It gets nuts. I've never had so many fumbles in a, like the number of fumbles. Anyway, you can also find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/casualquestlive, where I, a non-gamer, play a bunch of games for the very first time. Right now we're wrapping up Fallout New Vegas, so if you want to hear my Ulysses impression, go come check us out. I also stream Baldur's Gate 3, what's the game? Metal Gear Solid! We're still doing Metal Gear Solid.
Nice!
Yeah,
oh, that's never iconic.
Yeah, I've never played a single Metal Gear game. So if you want to see me fumble my way through stealth missions, come watch me play Metal Gear Solid. But you can follow Three Black Halflings at 3. That's the number 3 Black Halflings pretty much everywhere. The Pornhub is almost back up and running.
What?
So make sure to follow us.
Yes, it's a very curated, very good content. Yes. Check it out.
Not what I was expecting to hear. I love that though.
Check it out.
Hairy halfling feet all over.
No!
And if you enjoy all of what you're hearing, come support us. Patreon.com/threeblackhalflings. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Thank you once again, CB, from the bottom of my heart. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here.
This has been a lot of fun. I'll be back at some point.
Oh yeah! And we will see all of you next time. So long, Shire folk!
So long, Shire! Oh,
farewell to you, my friend.
Yeah!
Hey!
Oh my God,
I'm so glad that you sang that song. What is that? Blue? Is that Bear in the Blue House?
No, out of
what show is that?
That was a HeadGum Podcast.